Let's get done. Then let's have a feast. We are rolling. Let us feast.
Think about a feast.
Yeah. I'm interested in that.
Yeah. There were one time you and Pat made the squingeli.
Yeah.
That was great. I don't think I've ever seen that prepared before that and after that.
Yeah, you don't see squingeli in restaurants that often. It's very rare.
Does it go by another name in restaurants?
Uh-uh.
Squingeli.
I don't think so. I mean, it's conch in English, I think.
Do you think people are like...
Yeah, this says conch, but I don't think English people eat that shit. Conch. But I think it's a Mediterranean thing. I could be just talking out of my ass here. I'm just making shit up, but that's fine.
Squingeli. Well, people aren't here for the squingeli talk. So.
You didn't come for squingeli, folks.
You didn't come for squingeli talk, so we can say whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody.
We're here now. Guess what it is?
It's the last episode.
Last episode, fuckers. Did you think you'd get this far into Hamlet? Huh? I didn't either.
Yeah. Are you excited? We're going into Act 5. The play is going to end today.
Yeah.
And you're going to get to see how all these crazy plot threads intertwine at the end of the play.
I wish they went into the pirate thing a little deeper. But this is good too. This is what made modern theater, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In this act, Act 5, we're going to eventually get everybody who needs revenge in the same place. Hamlet needs to get revenge for the death of his father.
Right.
Laertes needs to get revenge for the death of his father and now his sister.
Oh, yeah. Ophelia.
And Fortinbras, we're going to find out, isn't really going to engage in sled warfare. He's headed to the same place that these two guys are headed.
Oh, yeah. So he faked the sled warfare.
Mm-hmm. It was a ruse.
A ruse, y'all. All right, that's good. We're here.
Okay, let's go. We are in Act 5, Scene 1, A Churchyard. And again, we're using the second Norton critical edition of the Cordo 2 text. I've just got to say that. Mm-hmm. Edited by Robert S. Miola. Act 5 is pretty standardized, so Act 5 is not going to be different in the folio version either. The scene breaks are the same. So we start out in Act 5. So now here's where we're at in the story. Act 5 begins, enter two clowns, one a gravedigger. Now, I knew you were going to like that.
That's a nice lead-in.
Yeah. So, clowns in Shakespeare. These are not clowns as we know them, right? They're no big noses, no red noses, no big shoes.
No posse.
Yeah. No little cars.
No insane posse.
No insane posse. Clowns in Shakespeare's theater were just sort of like the comic relief. And basically, you'd have two guys come out in between scenes, and they would kind of be like rural stereotypes. They would be like hayseeds. You know, they would come out going, bum, 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 hey, guy. You know, and they would tell like some jokes on the stage
right before
we got back into the action. Now, of course, in Hamlet, being as death-obsessed as it is, the clowns are gravediggers.
Right.
And they're in a graveyard.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun.
So when they first start here, the gravedigger says... He's asking a question of the other. He says, is she to be buried in Christian burial when she willfully seeks her own salvation? So he's talking, of course, about Ophelia. Is she going to get a Christian burial when she willfully seeks her own salvation, right? She didn't try to save herself.
Right, because if you want to be with God, you can't, how does that work? You can't take yourself out. You can't take yourself out.
Oh, you were saying it like there was a saying.
Yeah.
No. Okay. I thought you were looking for a particular saying.
No, I'm just thinking of the death rules here and the heaven rules.
Yeah. In a Catholic framework, I went to Sunday school.
I went to Catholic school.
Right. Well, you should know this then.
I should know this.
In a Catholic framework, if you commit suicide, I believe it's a mortal sin, meaning you can't get forgiven for that sin because there's no time after the suicide to get forgiven. And you know you're committing a sin, so you go to hell. If you commit suicide, you are no longer one of the saved. Everybody knows you're in hell. It's pretty harsh. So that's the question the gravediggers are asking is, you know, if you're a suicide, you shouldn't get a Christian burial. You should be put out in like the garbage bin.
So yeah, they got a mass grave for that.
Well, I don't know if it was a mass grave, but you know, it wasn't the best real estate in the graveyard. You know, there's the Christian graveyard, and then there's a potter's field or whatever. You put just whoever
everybody
out
else.
There.
Everybody
else goes out there in the mud.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand the times.
Right. So that's the question. And these grave diggers are talking about, these are supposed to be our comic relief. So he just asked, is she to be buried in Christian burial when she willfully seeks her own salvation? And the other one says, I tell thee she is. Therefore, make her grave straight. The crowner hath sat on her and finds it Christian burial. The crowner is the coroner. We've had just a slight change in that word. The crowner. So the coroner decided she's a Christian burial. And now the other gravedigger says, how can that be unless she drowned herself in her own defense? These guys are supposed to be funny.
This is how they rolled back then.
The other guy goes, why, 'tis found so. And now the gravedigger is going to do like this. I always thought this was kind of interesting that they even had lawyer jokes back then. The gravedigger is trying to do some fake legalese as to why she gets Christian burial. He says, it must be se offendendo. It cannot be else. For here lies the point. If I drown myself wittingly, it argues an act. And an act hath three branches. It is to act, to do, to perform. Argyle, she drowned herself wittingly. Now it's like a legalese joke. He's saying that
He goes into the Latin first.
Right. He goes into the Latin. Yep. And he says there's three branches, but the three branches are the same shit. To act, to do, and to perform. He's a moron. He's a clown.
A clown.
He's a clown. The clowns go on talking about, you know, this burial, and the gravedigger asks a question. He gives a riddle to the other one, and he says, what is he that builds stronger than either the mason, the shipwright, or the carpenter? Let's see if you get it. This is a riddle. What is he that builds stronger than either the mason, the shipwright, or the carpenter?
Oh, geez. What other options would I have back then? I say it's the, what's the guy that makes the horseshoes? That guy.
Blacksmith?
There you go.
That's a pretty reasonable answer.
Huh? You put in the water, you make it hot.
It's made
out
of metal.
You put in the water, you beat it up a little bit.
So now you gave a good answer. The other guy gives a good answer too, but not the right answer.
All right.
The other guy says, the gallows maker, for that outlives 1,000 tenants. Right? Pretty good, right?
Worked his way around that. I like it.
And the gravedigger says the same thing. He says, I like thy wit well, in good faith. The gallows does well. But how does it well? It does well to those that do ill. Now thou dost ill to say the gallows is built stronger than the church. Argyle, the gallows may do well to thee. To it again, come. So he's basically saying, no, it's not the gallows maker, but it was good. And the gravedigger says, cudgel thy brains no more about it. For your dull ass will not mend his pace with beating. And when you are asked this question next, say, a grave maker. The houses he makes last till doomsday. Go get thee in and fetch me a stoup of liquor. So, who builds stronger than the mason, the shipwright, and the carpenter? The grave digger. Me. Because the house I'm making lasts forever. Which, kind of unfair, because I feel like the other guy had an answer that was just as good.
It was all right.
The gallows maker. And your blacksmith answer, too. This is not a good riddle.
Yep. That's why they're clowns.
Right.
Bunch of fucking clowns.
I think it's great that in this death-obsessed play, and we're going to see more of this in a second, the comic relief is happening in a graveyard. So this gravedigger starts digging a grave and singing. You know, he's digging Ophelia's grave, and who comes in but Hamlet and Horatio? They come in, they're walking through the graveyard together. Now, if you remember the last time we saw Hamlet, it was in Act 4 when he said, "From this time forth, my thoughts be bloody or nothing worth." Right? He's like, "I am going to go get my revenge." Then he went off to England.
Right.
Right? So now he's in a... So the very next time we see him, what's he doing? He's in a graveyard, and he's going to be just talking with Horatio about death. He's back on that. He's depressed again. Hamlet says about the gravedigger, he says, "Has this fellow no feeling of his business? He sings in grave making." And Horatio says, "Custom hath made it in him a property of easiness." Meaning, yeah, he's used to it. Custom hath made it in him a property of easiness. He can dig a grave and just be doing his job. And Hamlet says, "'Tis even so, the hand of little employment hath the daintier sense." I think that's interesting. And let's get into that. The hand of little employment hath the daintier sense. So somebody who does less work
has no calluses on their hands.
No calluses on their hands. They are more sensitive. They have daintier senses. So Hamlet's almost kind of making fun of himself here a little bit. He's like, "I'm a prince. I'm sensitive. I'm like death." Oh, now remember, the idea of death levels Hamlet. Whenever he starts thinking about death, he can't even live, because he thinks about death. And he's like, this guy, this working man, is just sitting here singing and digging a grave. Looks like you got a thought coming.
Yeah, I don't know. This fucking guy. I don't like him.
You don't like Hamlet.
I don't like Hamlet. But there's likable things about him. I like that he's making little jokes like that. Because deep down, he knows what he is. He's kind of, I don't know. All right, go on.
He's kind of an asshole. Yeah. That's been our theme.
But he knows this. This is written into this shit. Or no?
Let's come back to that. Let's come back to it. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure how self-aware Hamlet is. He's definitely an extremely cerebral, smart person. But he's so neurotic, he's been completely ineffective in the play. He hasn't been able to accomplish anything at all because he keeps psyching himself up to do it and then getting sidetracked with thoughts of death. Like, he keeps thinking of death and how death makes life meaningless. He gets into this here as the gravedigger throws up a skull. Hamlet says, "That skull had a tongue in it and could sing once. How the knave jowls it to the ground, as if it were Cain's jawbone that did the first murder. This might be the pate of a politician, which this ass now overreaches, one that would circumvent God, might it not?" So he's saying that skull might have been a politician who tried to, like, get around God.
And this ass is tossing it over.
And this ass is tossing. Now look at him.
Yeah.
He's just getting tossed out of a grave. Horatio says, "It might, my lord." Hamlet says, "There's an," like, the gravedigger is throwing up these bones, and Hamlet says, "There's another. Why may not that be the skull of a lawyer? Where be his quiddities now, his quillities, his cases, his tenures, and his tricks? Why does he suffer this mad knave now to knock him about the sconce with a dirty shovel and will not tell him of his action of battery?" Yeah, you may be throwing a lawyer's skull out. Why isn't the lawyer, like, objecting to this with a legal case?
They didn't like the lawyers back then.
Yeah, a lot of lawyer humor here. Yeah. Hamlet, again, we skipped a little bit here, but he kind of went through a couple different people that these bones might have been. He's thinking about death. And he goes up to the gravedigger, and he's going to have a conversation with his gravedigger. I think this is one of the most important conversations in the play. And here's why. Hamlet, you remember, through all of the play, has been two steps ahead of everybody he talks to. Right? He's always making double meanings and jokes and quips and asides that we as the audience can get. But everybody else is like, "I do not understand this. It is madness."
Right.
Right? This gravedigger, you're going to see, is the only person in the play who gives it back to him, who can fuck with Hamlet the way he fucks with everybody else.
Right.
And let's take a look at that. And I want you to think about this. And this is, again, Hamlet thinks that death eliminates class distinction, right? Remember when we were talking about a king going a progress through the guts of a beggar?
Right.
So when you're dead, all of your achievements in life are null and void. Now that we're standing in a graveyard, we have a prince, the highest man in the land, and a gravedigger, the lowest man in the land, quite literally, because he's in a hole. And they're going to be sparring and have and match wits, and the gravedigger is the only person in the play who can fuck with Hamlet just as well as he fucks with everybody else.
Wonderful.
So death kind of eliminates class and class distinctions.
It's the great equalizer.
Yes. Hamlet walks up to him and he says, "Whose grave's this, sirrah?" Now remember, he doesn't know it's Ophelia's grave. The gravedigger says, "Mine, sir." And he keeps digging. He starts singing his song again.
Fun.
Yeah. Hamlet says, "I think it be thine indeed, for thou liest in it." The gravedigger says, "You lie out on it, sir, and therefore 'tis not yours," meaning you're outside of it, so it's not your grave. "For my part, I do not lie in it, yet it is mine." So I'm not lying in it, but it is my grave. And now Hamlet does something here he never does in the play. He tries to explain his own double meaning. When he said, "I think it be thine indeed, for thou liest in it," there's a double meaning there. You lie in it because you're in it. You lie in it because you're fucking lying. It's not your grave.
So he's going to be like, "You get it?" Yeah. Kind of moment.
Yeah. Hamlet says, he explains himself. He says, "Thou dost lie in it to be in it and say it is thine. 'Tis for the dead, not for the quick. Therefore thou liest." You ever hear that expression, the quick and the dead?
Yeah, that's Clint Eastwood.
Is it a Clint Eastwood movie?
It's some sort of cowboy movie.
Well, that was an old way to distinguish the quick and the dead are the living and the dead. And I always like that image, like, we are a lot faster than dead people, if you think about it, right? we're really quick compared to them.
And you only got two choices, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's faster, the living or the dead? Definitely the living. So yeah, when he says the quick and the dead, or whenever anybody says the quick here, they mean the living. He said to the gravedigger, "Thou dost lie in it to be in it and say it is thine. 'Tis for the dead, not for the quick. Therefore thou liest." And the gravedigger goes, "'Tis a quick lie, sir. 'Twill away again from me to you." So he goes, "Sure, I lied, but it was a quick lie. And you said," so he's playing on the word quick. So this is the gravedigger kind of just everything Hamlet throws at him, he's throwing it back. He's engaging in making like subtle double meanings and jokes and digs. Hamlet says, "What man dost thou dig it for?" The gravedigger says, "For no man, sir." Hamlet says, "What woman then?" The gravedigger says, "For none neither." Hamlet says, "Who is to be buried in it?" And the gravedigger says, "One that was a woman, sir, but rest her soul, she's dead."
He's fucking with him.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah. So we see Hamlet getting his own brand of sort of verbal.
And he's getting flustered.
Yeah, he's getting a little flustered with it. He's you know, this kind of wordplay is getting thrown back at him by a gravedigger.
That's fun. Shakespeare.
I haven't been given line references. I should. Hamlet says here, as you mentioned, he's getting frustrated. He says, "How absolute the knave is! We must speak by the card, or equivocation will undo us." So he's like, the guy is absolute, meaning he's taking all my words literally and twisting their meanings, you know? I can't deal with this.
The knave.
Yeah, I love that word, the knave.
Is what is it?
K-N-A-V-E.
Is knave. That how it's spelled?
Yeah, it's spelled with a K.
Wow, that's fun.
Yeah, and we've used that word before, like knavery. A knave is like someone who's being tricky.
The knave.
So something interesting kind of happens here in that we finally find out, this is the point in the play where we find out how old Hamlet is.
Oh.
We never really knew.
We just know he's in college.
Yeah, we knew he went to school in Wittenberg.
Right.
He says to the gravedigger, "How long hast thou been gravemaker?" The gravedigger says, "Of the days in the year, I came to it that day that our last King Hamlet overcame Fortinbras." So if you remember way back at the beginning of the play, mm-hmm. Hamlet's dad killed Fortinbras' his dad the day that this guy got his job.
Wow.
Okay? And Hamlet says, "How long is that since?" The gravedigger says, "Cannot you tell that? Every fool can tell that. It was that very day that young Hamlet was born, he that is mad and sent into England." Right, so Whoa. The gravedigger doesn't know he's talking to Hamlet. And Hamlet says, "I marry. Why was he sent into England?" The gravedigger says, "Why, because he was mad. He shall recover his wits there, or if he does not, 'tis no great matter there." Hamlet says, "Why?" And the gravedigger says, "'Twill not be seen in him there. There the men are as mad as he." So they're going to send him to England, and either he's going to get better, or it won't matter because everybody's crazy there. They won't even notice.
That's a little shots fired.
Yeah. And speaking of which, Shakespeare's English, yes. Right? So he's writing Danish people making fun of English people for an English audience.
That's fun.
Right? Now, this is where we get the age. Hamlet says on line 139, "How came he mad?" The gravedigger says, "Very strangely, they say." Hamlet says, "How strangely?" The gravedigger says, "Faith, even with losing his wits." Hamlet said, now Hamlet, again, he's trying to get some real information. Hamlet says, "Upon what ground?" Meaning, what drove him crazy? Upon what ground? Like legal grounds. And the gravedigger, again, kind of misunderstands him. "Why, here in Denmark. I have been sexton here, man and boy, 30 years. Hamlet is 30 years old. That's where we get that.
Okay.
Because so he has been there for 30 years. We know he got his job the day Hamlet was born, which was also the day Hamlet's dad killed Fortinbras's dad.
Right. So 30 back then. Wow.
Well, I think if you were a prince, it was different.
Yeah.
I think if you're a prince, basically you're a perpetual student. He's just he's like in ultra grad school.
30's not like pretty old back then, though.
It definitely was.
Yeah.
It definitely was.
You're like
Hamlet's a middle-aged college student.
Yeah. Because now 30, you know.
Is the new.
What is it?
Something.
So it's something. Like yeah. People are measuring
30's the
that.
New 20.
Yeah. They're measuring that by something.
20's the new 5.
20's the new 5. Forever 5.
The gravedigger and Hamlet continue talking about death. On line 146, Hamlet says, Hamlet now, again, not getting his revenge, he stops to talk to a gravedigger about rotting bodies. He says, "How long will a man lie in the earth ere he rot?" The gravedigger says, "Faith, if he be not rotten before he die, as we have many pocky corpses that will scarce hold the laying in, he will last you some 8 year or 9 year. A tanner will last you 9 year." Hamlet says, "Why he more than another?" The gravedigger says, "Why, sir, his hide is so tanned with his trade that he will keep out water a great while, and your water is a sore decayer of your horse undead body." Another joke there. Tanners take longer to rot.
They last a little longer because they're working with preservatives.
Yeah, that's the joke there. This really is the comic relief moment. You've got Hamlet just kind of like talking with a gravedigger about death, and it's going to get kind of grim here. The gravedigger says on line 154, "Here's a skull now hath lain you in the earth 23 years. And he picks up this skull and he says, "This has been here for 23 years. And Hamlet says, "Whose was it?" The gravedigger says, "A horse and mad fellow it was. Whose do you think it was?" Hamlet says, "Nay, I know not." And the gravedigger reveals, he says, "This same skull, sir, was, sir, Yorick's skull, the king's jester."
Oh, here we go.
Right?
It's about to happen.
Yeah, it's about to happen. I always thought this was Hamlet takes the skull. This is that, you know, the famous moment. Every time you see Hamlet holding a skull. This is, I think, the perfect image for this play. We're here in the moment of comic relief. And where is the jester? He's fucking dead. We're holding the skull of the funny man that Hamlet knows.
Great.
Right? The court jester is a skull.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's this perfect mixture of humor and death and kind of irony. Hamlet takes the skull and he says it. "Alas, poor Yorick. I knew him, Horatio. A fellow of infinite jest, of most excellent fancy. Shout out to David Foster Wallace, of course. Name of his famous book, Infinite Jest.
There we go.
Hamlet says, line 166, "He hath bore me on his back 1,000 times. And now how abhorred in my imagination it is. My gorge rises at it. Here hung those lips that I have kissed. I know not how oft." That was normal back then.
Yeah.
You always kiss a jester on the lips, they said. Mm.
Birdman and Lil Wayne. Mm-hmm. It's gangster shit.
Right. He says, "Where be your jibes now? Your gambols, your songs, your flashes of merriment that were wont to set the table on a roar. Not one now to mock your own grinning?" He's talking now to the skull. You got to realize this is the jester that entertained him when he was a child.
Right.
Right. This, it would be like finding the skull of Captain Kangaroo.
Right. And you're right? Just like kind of fumbling it around in your hands and shit.
Yeah. It's like finding Barney's skull. It'd be a little bigger, but
yeah, you know, like a little heavier.
Yeah. A little heavier. But you've got, you know, this image of this happy moment from your childhood, and now you're holding the dude's skull.
It's like I'm holding like Steven Spielberg's
skull. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. E.T.'s skull. E.T.'s
skull.
So it's a combination of death and your fondest childhood memories.
And you're like, I love that movie.
Yeah.
Just holding the skull. Yeah. Okay. I get it. Cool. Yeah. Cool. Cool. Yeah.
Hamlet is kind of losing it here. He looks at Horatio and he says to Horatio, "Dost thou think Alexander looked to this fashion in the earth?" You know who Alexander is, right?
Yeah.
Alexander the Great of Macedonia.
Yeah.
Again, there's this idea that death levels human accomplishment. So Hamlet is pulling out probably what in his mind was the most accomplished man who has ever lived. Alexander the Great, who has conquered the entire known world at the time from the Middle East across continental Europe.
Right.
Right. And he says, he asks Horatio, "Do you think Alexander looked like this in the earth?" And Horatio says, "Even so." And Hamlet says, "And smelt so? Pah." And he puts the skull down. Obviously, it smells.
He like throws it across the room.
Yeah, tosses Yorick. Horatio says, "Even so, my lord." And Hamlet says, "To what base uses we may return, Horatio? Why may not imagination trace the noble dust of Alexander till he finds it stopping a bunghole?"
What?
I knew you were going to get stuck on that. I knew. As I was reading it, I was like, we're going to get stuck on bunghole.
We're
going
to have to do a whole new episode.
Yeah, we have to do. We have to talk about bunghole.
So this is like, okay. All right, go on.
What is a bunghole prior to Beavis and Butthead?
Right, because that's where it starts.
For most of us.
Yeah.
So a bunghole, I always explain this to my students, and they don't know Beavis and Butthead either. So usually they're just staring at me like, what the fuck is he talking about?
They have no cultural reference for bunghole?
I don't think so.
Huh.
I don't think bunghole is really in the common parlance at the moment.
Oh, man.
So a bunghole.
This is blowing my fucking mind, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I foresaw this. A bunghole originally was when you had a big barrel of beer or wine.
Okay.
The fucking hole you punch in it is called the bunghole.
Right.
And so you can see how it became an asshole. Big thing,
yeah.
Little hole.
Right.
Right. That's how a bunghole eventually got, that's how we go from antiquity to Beavis and Butthead.
Right.
Is big round thing, yeah. Little hole that stuff comes out of.
Right. So you have a party, you're going to need to bring a whole bung in.
Yeah, well, I don't think the barrel's called a bung. I think it's just called a bung hole.
Okay.
When you punch the hole in it.
All right. Can you run back the bung hole sentence again for me?
Sure. We're going to keep talking about it, or Hamlet is, at least for a second. Hamlet says, "Why may not imagination trace the noble dust of Alexander till he finds it stopping a bung hole?"
Yeah.
Right? So the dust of Alexander the Great may be stopping up a beer barrel somewhere. Now, Horatio in this act, now remember, Horatio is our guy.
Yeah.
He's the most even-keeled guy that everybody likes and everybody trusts, including Hamlet. Horatio's going to start to push back on Hamlet a little bit. Horatio says, "'Twere to consider too curiously to consider so." That's on line 185. He's saying, you're thinking about this a little weird. "'Twere to consider too curiously to consider it so." And Hamlet says on 186, "No, faith, not a jot, but to follow him thither with modesty enough and likelihood to lead it, Alexander died, Alexander was buried, Alexander returneth to dust, the dust is earth, of earth we make loam, and why of that loam whereto he was converted might not they stop a beer barrel? Hmm. Loam is what you make corks out of.
Wow, that's where we get wonderful.
Right, we're learning so much.
I'm getting my mind blown today.
But Hamlet's big thing is he's thinking about, he's like Alexander the Great, maybe a cork in a barrel somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
After he saw Yorick the Jester, there's this image just of everything rotting and right. going away. How could you stay focused on getting your just revenge and putting things right in the world when you look at the world and every last thing, right or wrong, is just going to turn into garbage?
It's all the same shit, man.
Right?
Why even bother, man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So, I'm sorry, the grave digger's out. He's gone. He's still in the scene.
He's still there.
He's the shit.
Yeah, he's hanging out, I think.
Because Hamlet's just been tripping out over all his death duties and shit and death in general. And then you got this dude. That's his whole life.
Yeah.
He's just dealing with death. And he's already gone through all of this.
Right. And remember, when Hamlet first walked in, he was shocked. He was like, how is this guy singing in a grave?
Right.
And like he's standing there going like, Alexander the Great is a cork somewhere. Like,
but the grave digger, he went through this like week one
yeah.
of his job.
Yeah. And remember, the hand of little employment hath the daintier sense. If you're working in a graveyard, you're not thinking about this shit.
Yeah. You're trying to get home for
trying to get some liquor. He said, bring me a stoop of liquor. He wants to get drunk, this guy.
Yep. That's how you do it.
I don't know where it says that the grave digger leaves. I'll have to double check on that, but it doesn't look like he leaves, but he's not in the scene after this. What happens now is now Hamlet's standing in the graveyard. Enter King, Queen, Laertes, and the corpse of Ophelia with a doctor of divinity and attendants. Hamlet has accidentally showed up at Ophelia's funeral.
Oh, he didn't know.
He didn't know.
He didn't know. But the clowns knew.
Yes.
The clowns.
The clowns. The clowns didn't tell him.
The clowns did not fucking tell him. And neither did the grave digger.
No, Hamlet is at Ophelia's funeral and he doesn't know anything about it. He just sees Laertes, Ophelia's brother, and his mom, Gertrude, and his uncle, Claudius. And as they're walking in, of course, Laertes, who is like the crazy, passionate, fiery guy, is arguing with the priest. Laertes says, what ceremony else? This is on line 201. Hamlet turns to Horatio and says, that is Laertes, a very noble youth, Mark. Watch what happens here too, because he just said, a very noble youth. He's calling Laertes out. He knows Laertes mm-hmm. from around. It's a brother of the chick he wanted to marry.
Right.
He just said he's a noble youth. Watch what happens later though. Laertes says again to the priest on line 203, what ceremony else? And the priest says, here obsequies have been as far enlarged as we have warranty. I don't know why I want to do that voice. I just really want to.
That's fine. Keep going.
Her death was doubtful, and but that great command oversways the order, she should in ground unsanctified been lodged till the last trumpet. That reveals why Ophelia is getting a Christian burial. He said, but that great command oversways the order. So somebody high up.
The crowner.
Well, somebody above even the crowner. Claudius. Claudius has been trying to cover up all the deaths in this family. Remember, Polonius had a real fast funeral?
Yeah.
He's just trying to cover up Hamlet because he's got like a growing situation with the people going, yeah. What the fuck is going on What's in the castle?
People are dying. And
yeah, people are dying. Everybody says the prince is crazy.
Yeah. The place smells like blood.
Yeah, there's blood all over the place. So Laertes is arguing with this priest that, you know, he wants his sister to have a more ceremony. You know what I mean? Like, this is my sister. She should get like a big lavish funeral. And here we are in like a crummy graveyard and there's just a couple people. And the priest told him, you know, except that the order came from high up, you know, she should have really been buried in unsanctified ground. So Laertes, he's so melodramatic, Laertes. This is what I love about this character. On line 216, he says, Lay her in the earth, and from her fair and unpolluted flesh may violets spring. I tell thee, churlish priest, a ministering angel shall my sister be while thou liest howling. So he's just told the priest that my sister's going to be an angel when you're in fucking hell.
Yeah.
As the priest is doing the ceremony. But, of course, he just mentioned what? His sister. Hamlet turns to Horatio and says, what, the fair Ophelia?
Yeah, he did not know.
He just found out.
Yeah.
That Ophelia's dead. The queen on line 221, famous line as she throws flowers on the grave, she says, sweets to the sweet. Farewell. I hope thou shouldest have been my Hamlet's wife. I thought thy bride bed to have decked, sweet maid, and not have strewed thy grave. Right? So I thought I was going to be, you know, at your wedding to my son, and here we are at your grave. And Laertes is still going. He's really mad. Line 224, he says, oh, treble woe fall 10 times double on that cursed head whose wicked deed thy most ingenious sense deprived thee of. So, you know, curses on whoever did this. And then he says, hold off the earth a while till I have caught her once more in mine arms. And Laertes, again, very melodramatic. He literally leaps into Ophelia's grave and says, now pile your dust upon the quick and dead till of this flat a mountain you have made to overtop old Pelion or the skyish head of blue Olympus. Those are two mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying, he jumped into his sister's grave and he's like, pour the dirt on me until there's a mountain. You know, he wants to be buried alive with his sister.
Yeah.
In sort of this display.
He's hurting.
He's hurting. Now, not only that, this is where this gets really kind of out of hand very quickly. Hamlet comes to the funeral now. He walks out of the shadows and says, what is he whose grief bears such an emphasis, whose phrase of sorrow conjures the wandering stars and makes them stand like wonder-wounded hearers? This is I, Hamlet the Dane. So, what is he whose grief bears such an emphasis? He's pissed off at Laertes for being showy about his grief. And then Laertes grapples with him. Hamlet, Laertes says, the devil take thy soul. Hamlet has literally sort of attacked Laertes at his sister's funeral.
Oh, wait up. So who threw the first?
I think it's implied that Hamlet does, because it says, Hamlet's stage direction says advancing.
Oh, shit.
Right? And then Laertes grappling with him. I think Hamlet attacks Laertes because he's pissed off that Laertes is being so showy with his grief.
Yeah, and he's just finding out and not even having a second to have his own moment.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, imagine what
process.
This, just to put this in real world terms, imagine you're at somebody's funeral and the brother is crying over the casket and an ex-boyfriend comes up and fucking slugs him. That's what's happening here. This is a scene.
Yeah, this is a scene.
Yeah, this is not good behavior.
Well, I'm sorry, really quick. Why'd he roll up to the graveyard again?
We're suspending disbelief and believing that he just happened to be there because he was looking at skulls and being like maudlin.
Right, right, right.
And then the funeral. So he was walking back.
Right.
I think, you know, suspension of disbelief. He's walking back. He's walking through the graveyard. He sees the skulls. He stops for a minute. Right, Yorick, right. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then they come in with the funeral and he's like, what the fuck is this?
So he's like, I guess we were doing shit like that in our 30s.
Yeah.
Playing with the skulls and shit.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's, you know what the thing is? I keep forgetting that he's royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's normal shit.
Is it? I don't think anybody thinks Hamlet's normal in this play.
No, I just think like if you're in a position of royalty, you just like playing with skulls and shit. Like you do whatever you want to do.
Sure, in general. You know,
the Dane. What do you say? I'm Hamlet the Dane.
Yeah. This is I, Hamlet the Dane.
I'm Hamlet the Dane. Like I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Because I've never walked into a room and just been like, it is me, like Ari.
The Filipino.
Why the racer.
Yeah. I mean, he's announcing his nationality. Yeah. He's like, it is I, Ray the Filipino.
Yeah.
It is okay. I, Michael the Italian.
Or is it like, it is I, like, Ray the New Jersey?
Yeah. Well, I guess the American. It is I, Ray the American.
Ray the American.
It's your nation.
Wow. That's not bad. That's not bad. That's something I'm going to hold on to for the future. Maybe, you know, because like as you get older, they say you start to go a little right wing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. That's like.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah. You go a little right wing in your 60s.
Yeah. Go to Florida.
That's when I become Ray the American.
It's pretty badass title.
Yeah.
Hamlet says something pretty badass right here. He's when Laertes is like grappling with him and Hamlet says, "Thou prayest not well. I prithee take thy fingers from my throat. For though I am not splenitive and rash," that's what Laertes is, splenitive. Like he's got an overactive spleen. He's excited and rash.
Splenitive.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Hamlet says, "For though I am not splenitive and rash, yet have I in me something dangerous, which let thy wisdom fear. Hold off thy hand." Right? So even though I'm not a hothead like you, I'm fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
So you better take your hands off
I
me.
I will fuck you
I
up.
I will fuck you up.
So they're grappling already.
They're grappling in Ophelia's grave or right by it.
Wow. So, yeah. So, and this is... So this is like a Danish grappling technique.
Mm-hmm. Danish funeral grappling. It's in the Winter Olympics.
Yeah, yeah. Just Google it. Just Google it. Wherever you're at, stop the podcast and Google it, and hit us back with what you get.
Yeah.
And we're back.
So Hamlet continues his... He is going now. He's incensed. We know this from the reactions of the people around him. On line 249, Hamlet says, "I loved Ophelia. 40,000 brothers could not with all their quantity of love make up my sum. What wilt thou do for her?" And the king says, "Oh, he is mad, Laertes." And the queen says, "For the love of God, forbear him." You know, they're just saying, this is Hamlet's crazy. Don't hurt him. And Hamlet says, "Swoons, show me what thou'lt do."
Swoons was like his,
yeah.
That's his gang and shit.
I think swoons means God's wounds.
Oh, shit.
It's like a swear. God's wounds or Christ's wounds.
That's a dope gang name. Like if you have a gang and you're like calling the hit, you're like, "Swoons, take them down." Like it's like West. I'm not thinking like modern gang shit. I'm thinking like more like West Side Story. The swoons.
Yeah.
That's fun. That's good. We'll write that down.
The swoons from Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm derailing this thing.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Great.
Swoons, show me what thou'lt do. I like swoons.
Yeah.
Yeah, Christ's wounds. And then he says, "Would weep, would fight, would fast, would tear thyself, would drink up easel, eat a crocodile? I'll do it." He's talking to Laertes now. He's like, "What are you going to do to show your grief? Are you going to eat a fucking crocodile?"
I swear to God, I'll eat this crocodile.
Yeah, I'll eat the fucking crocodile.
I'll eat this Danish crocodile once it rolls up. Yeah. I swear to God.
Yeah, he's in a flurry of rage and emotion here.
Oh my God.
"Dost come here to whine? To outface me with leaping in her grave? Be buried quick with her, and so will I. And if thou prate of mountains, let them throw millions of acres on us till our ground, singeing his pate against the burning zone, make Asa like a wart. Nay, and thou'lt mouth, I'll rant as well as thee." That's Hamlet to Laertes.
He's really going off.
Yeah. I like that. He says, "Dost come here to whine?" Right? What, did you come to your sister's funeral to cry, you fucking baby?
I just got here. I'm fine.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I'm fine. What's your fucking problem?
Yeah. He's acting crazy here. I mean, everybody just said this is craziness.
I don't get it, man.
And then he said, like, "You want to be buried alive with her? Fuck it. I'll go in there too. Pour the dirt on us till the mountain is like up against space," right? And then there's that last line. I actually read it wrong. I said, "I'll rant as well as thee." I mixed up my these and my thous. It's, "I'll rant as well as thou." Like, oh, you want to go on? I'll go on too. I could say a bunch of shit.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah,
blah, blah, blah. So this is peak asshole.
Peak asshole,
this
right?
This is the pinnacle of asshole.
This is probably peak asshole in the play.
Wow.
The queen right after this says, "This is mere madness. And this a while, the fit will work on him." Right? So he's in a fit. Just everybody, give him some room. Mm. They're not even paying attention to this anymore. They're like, this is crazy.
Right. And if, see, And again, this is like some royalty shit. Because in like probably in a normal funeral.
Anybody else gets removed.
Yeah.
This is Will Smith who gets to sit back down.
He gets to sit back down.
And then get an award later.
Wow. Yeah. That. Yeah. Yeah. This. Wow. Yeah. That's why some of this, I think, when I'm hearing it, it doesn't connect with me until I remind myself this is royalty shit.
Right.
Yeah.
So Hamlet says, oh, there's a, not the first appearance of this, but I think it popularized it. Hamlet says, "Hear you, sir? What is the reason that you use me thus?" Again, he's talking to Laertes. He thinks this is all about him. Before, when he says, "Dost thou come here to whine to outface me with leaping in her grave?" He was trying to imply, are you trying to outdo me? Are you trying to say you're grieving more than me?
Trying to outgrieve me.
Right? And he says, "I loved you ever, but it is no matter. Let Hercules himself do what he may. The cat will mew and dog will have his day."
Mew. The cats mewed back then.
Yeah, they used to mew.
Wow. Evolution, man.
Yeah, but I mean, that was the phrase I was talking about. The dog will have his day. I looked into this because I was like,
caught on the mew.
Yeah. we're focusing on different things. I thought, have you heard that before? You know, yeah. The dog will have his day. Yeah. I looked into it. I was like, was this the first appearance? And I don't think it was. I think it existed in various sayings before that, meaning everybody gets their moment.
Right.
But Shakespeare popularized it from what I read. This is some very quick internet research.
I feel like dogs have more than a day. Am I thinking too much like about the modern dog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, even back when we were kids, people used to just like chain the dog in the backyard to a stick and occasionally throw it meat.
Yeah, my uncle had an outside dog.
Yeah, I had an outside, well, my neighbor had an outside dog that was like my best friend when I was a kid.
Right.
Kid, dog just chained to a post day, night, week in, week out, little house.
Yeah, sometimes my uncle, he would bring back like big old turtles and those would just live in the backyard now. Turtle finder.
I had a turtle that got lost in the backyard.
I don't even think you're supposed to. I don't know. I'm going to go into a turtle hole.
Yeah, let's not do that again.
<Let's> not.
We cut the first one.
Yeah.